Misinformation.
101 FM Radio Miraya, powered by the people, uniting the nation, your preferred station, the voice of peace. Radio Miraya, Radio Miraya.
The Round Table.
Informative, fresh, and direct.
What do the people of South Sudan want? They want just any government, or they want a government that they feel would represent the kinds of things they need that will bring a sustainable peace?
Hear from the experts, policymakers, and major stakeholders about trending national issues around you. On the roundtable, ideas are served.
This is one. Allow me.
Okay. Go ahead. Okay.
Join the experts as they discuss national issues and how they affect you.
We don't want to go back to war. We don't want to go back to war.
The roundtable every Saturday from 8 to 10 in the morning, with a repeat on Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on Radio Raya.
The roundtable.
I wanna be kalasu, araba be kalasu. The cool kalamu bejer rat, Mambo Alex, aka Young Simbo, the Jeffrey Soldier.
Mine, mine, hajaka,
Ikatulu,
dana de hajaka,
Ikatulu.
Sudan for signing peace agreement, Benina, to free South Sudan from landmines. Together we can, together we stand.
Let's join our hands together to free South Sudan from landmines.
Mine, hajaka,
Ikatulu.
Dana de hajaka,
Ikatulu.
Mine, hajaka,
Ikatulu.
Dana de hajaka,
Ikatulu.
Mine suffered underground, others planted above the ground. Long to moon barabara, size to moon barabara. Gardens allowed it in sun, gardens allowed it arabat. Salah segeru, mata lemesu, kantali go, ode kabara. Leokoma, how come on, le mine aksan, peri mine ta.
Mine, hajaka,
Ikatulu.
Dana de hajaka,
Ikatulu.
Mine, hajaka,
Ikatulu.
Dana de hajaka,
Ikatulu.
Expected my fee.
Hello and welcome to the round table with me, Sunny Martin. We are coming to you live from Juba this weekend. And today we are going to be discussing more about the planned establishment of the Commission of Truth, Reconciliation and Healing as by the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. And in our discussion today, we are discussing the establishment of the Commission of Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, and also the Hybrid Court for South Sudan and the Compensation and Reparation Authority, which according to the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement shall independently promote the common objectives of facilitating truth, reconciliation and healing, compensation and reparation in this country. And also according to Chapter 5 of the agreement, Article 5.1.1, it mandates the Ministry of Justice and the Constitutional Affairs of Artigonu, in collaboration with other stakeholders and the civil society, they shall conduct a public consultation for a period of not less than 1 month prior to the establishment of the CTRH to inform the design of the legislation referred to in that chapter. And it's also recommend the process and the mechanism for the full enjoyment by victims of the rights to remedy, including by suggesting measures for reparation and compensation. So today we are going to be looking how can implementing peace and doing justice after the conflict in this country attempt to address the question of how a society transition from the conflict to a democratic rule after atrocities and gross violation of human rights have been committed. Joining me to discuss all this plus many more, I am joined in the studio by Dr. Gabriel Isaac Awo, who is the Undersecretary and Chairperson of the Task Force in the Ministry of Justice and Constitutional Affairs. Welcome to Radio Miriam.
Welcome, Sanima.
And also, we are expecting to be with us here to join us shortly, Ambassador Joram Biswaro from the African, who is the African Union Ambassador to South Sudan. He is still coming, and he confirmed his participation in this program this weekend. And I have with me in the studio also Chris Gitari, who is the Transitional Justice Advisor with the Reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, RJMEC. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
I have also with me here Professor Quel Maluil Jok, who is the Deputy Vice Chancellor, Dr. John Garang, University of Science and Technology, and he is also a professor of constitutional law and criminal international criminal law, and we are also going to be discussing with him here. Welcome, Professor.
My pleasure.
Okay, let me begin with the Undersecretary in the Ministry of Justice. We understand that next week, the Ministry of Justice will be launching the establishment of the Commission of Truth, Reconciliation and Healing here in Juba. Tell us more about it.
Thank you, Sani Martin, and thank you, the people of South Sudan. Good morning, all of you. As Martin have said, on the 5th of April, next week, the President of the Republic of South Sudan and the Vice President and all the stakeholders, all the government senior official in the Republic of South Sudan will attend the launching of the departure of the Technical Committee for Establishment of Truth, Reconciliation and Healing to the state and the three administrative areas to collect the views of the people of South Sudan so that a legislation can be drafted to govern the Commission of Truth and Reconciliation. So now the Minister of Justice has mandated by the agreement and the resolution of the Cabinet have done the necessary preparation on the ground, which from the beginning they have, the Minister of Justice have put in place a technical committee, because as the Minister is mandated to make the consultation with the stakeholder, it's very difficult for the Minister of Justice to do it alone. Mm-hmm. It is to be done with the stakeholders and the civil society. This is why the establishment of the Technical Committee came as a result of the consultation between the Minister and the stakeholder and civil society. And the members of the Technical Committee came from all those institutions. And the members are, there are 36 members from all various group of the people of South Sudan, included signatory to the agreement. So the launch will take place on the 5th, and the teams to the states and administration area will immediately departure after a week, so that within this week the UNDP will do the necessary logistic issues to give them the room to travel on to the states. So thank you very much.
Okay, before we go to other panelists here, when they go to the respective places all over the country, what are their mandates, the specific mandates they are tasked to do, and how long are they expected to carry these views from the people?
They are expected on 11th, after a week from launching, they will be going to the state administration area. And as provided by the agreement, the mandate of the technical committee is they are going to the ground exactly to collect the views or to meet the people, the victims on the ground, which include women, childs and girls, and including means. They will collect the information with them, how they want the legislation, which is being drafted by the Minister of Justice, to appear. So this is the mandate of the technical committee who are going to the state. The collection of data, of the information, as scheduled by the technical committee, will take, they will be on the ground for a period of two weeks. They will be there for 2 weeks. Welcome.
Okay, yes, we shall also be joined later on by the African Union Ambassador to South Sudan, Ambassador Joram Biswaro, who will be joining us here. And you have heard from the Undersecretary right here. Let's find out more from Chris from RGMEC. What will be the role of RGMEC in this process?
Good morning, Mangtin, and thank you. The RGMEC under Chapter 7, we are required to monitor and oversee the implementation of this agreement, and including Article 5.2.1.3, which Under Secretary has just alluded to, this consultations process. And we are also mandated to monitor and oversee the tasks of the RTIGNU, and in this regard, the Ministry of Justice, who are leading the efforts in partnership with stakeholders to undertake these consultations, these public consultations. So our role, therefore, is to monitor this process, and in case of any need for any corrective measures, we will engage with the RTIGNU and give our recommendations. But so far, you know that this process has required a lot of engagement with consultations. They have been preparing for the last number of months. They've put in a lot of work, and so they've just not gone to the field. They have actually had a lot of preparations, and we've actually also been keenly following those preparations as RGMEC. So that has been our role, and that will continue to be our role all through when they go into the states, as they collect the views from the people, and then when they go into drafting of legislation, we will be walking side by side with them. And that will be our role.
Okay, and we have been joined by the African Union Ambassador to South Sudan, Ambassador Joram Biswaro. Welcome, Ambassador, to the program.
Asante sana.
Okay, before we hear from the Ambassador, Professor, you are a professor of constitutional law and international criminal law. When you hear this plan establishment of this mechanism or the Commission of Truth, and these members are going to be traveling all over the country on the 11th of this month, a week after the launch here in Juba, what comes to your mind about the process?
Thank you very much for this question. People of South Sudan have suffered very much, and therefore every person who have a moral conscience will immediately rush into this conclusion to say that people of South Sudan would be ready to welcome those initiatives related to establishment of reconciliation, healing among the communities. However, one thing that comes to my mind is the exclusion of the institutions of higher learning from this process, because we are needed there to embody customary law. Because if this one is to be conducted in the Republic of South Sudan as peace and reconciliation and healing, then you need to embody customary laws. We have experiences during the time when we were fighting. There was UNLIT conference that was held in Tony, in Bahr el Ghazal, and they converged all the diversities, and the healing was successful, and we went for the comprehensive peace agreement because of that healing. And I think the Ministry of Justice and the executive power, they should be alerted in order to consider this customary law significantly. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes, Ambassador Biswaro, this process altogether goes with the establishment of the hybrid court for South Sudan. African Union are in charge of this process. Can you brief our listeners where are we with this process today? Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you, son. I should welcome this initial stage that the CTR is taking off. And from the African Union perspective, we deal with this mechanism holistically.
Mm-hmm.
Because we believe one feeds into another's. Some of the outcome of the CTRH obviously will feed in the hybrid court and so on and so forth. So I think we welcome this, and that's why all along we've been working together with the Minister of Justice and the Constitutional Affairs, the RGMEC, and the other stakeholders in this process.
Yes, Undersecretary, one of the main concerns here, many people will be looking forward to find an answer from you, is that one, people were having this idea of this team should only go to areas where the fighting between 2013 and 15 happened, like I'm talking about in this case, Jonglei State, Unity State, and Upper Nile State. And you are saying here that they should go to all the states and the three administrative areas. So they will be wondering, why can't you focus on that area? And then the second issue is, you know very well that for you to get a fair play in this process which you are going to embark on, there must be what should be known as freedom of expression. People should speak freely without intimidation, without being harassed, without being arrested, without fear. So anything you have put in this to consider into all what you are going to do, in case some people might have that kind of doubt in their mind?
Thank you again, Sandy Martin. This is a very important question, because what is the mind of the people that the war erupted in a certain areas in the Republic of South Sudan? And they thought that the people who are to be healed and to be reconciled is the people who are living in those areas. But really, we are one country, and everything affecting any area of South Sudan is affecting another area. Because let us take simply the example that the soldiers who are fighting between themselves in Malakan or in Bor or in Juba, for sure they have relatives in other areas of Republic of South Sudan. So for sure, the families of those victims or the family of those soldiers, we take it a simple example, they all also need to be healing and reconciled, because they are affected by war. And the war has affected the whole Southern Sudan, you remember. If we feel that people are suffering in Malakan, the same thing you will also realize it in Rumbeke and anywhere. So this is why the agreement has provided that the consultation is to be comprehensive for the whole country and the administration area, because even though there are not war there, but they have experience of what to be done and what to, how people can be healed. The second issue is that the technical committee, which is going to the states and the administration area, and this is also what we put to attention of the people, that going on the ground, they will be free and fair to collect the view of South Sudan. This is why even the Minister of Justice, our governing institution, did not take it. We can ask our legal counsel all over South Sudan to do this assignment, but for sure will not be fair. People will say that the government is the one conducting this. So this is why the technical committee is composed of all groups of the people of South Sudan, including the secretary to the agreement. And as the professor said here, even the academia also, they are there, because there was also a signatory to the agreement. So for sure, the collection of data or the view would be fair, because the technical committee are not official from the Minister of Justice. They are not part of the Minister of Justice, but they are collecting from the various group of the people of South Sudan, which are the stakeholders and the civil society. Thank you.
Okay, so you can guarantee the freedom of speech and assembly as this process is going to begin on the 11th of this month?
For sure, I guarantee this because they will be collecting and issues which is also, we think that is very important to be embodied in the legislation.
Okay. After all this process, what next after gathering the views of the people?
After gathering the views of the people of South Sudan, the whole teams will bring their own reports. And this report will be compiled and analyzed. We have a technical people who are put in place to do this job. Will be analyzed. After analyzing and putting the information together, then from there, the legislation will be drafted, or the bill for establishing a commission, the Minister of Justice would start drafting it. Then the rest of the process of enactment of the legislation will continue from Minister of Justice, and we are sure before we send it to the Council of Ministers, we will have also conducting meetings with the groups, and we will have a validation meeting so that also people to be aware what was brought and collected from the ground.
Okay. Professor, as a professor of constitutional law and international criminal law, and people will be saying the very concern of the victims is for the perpetrators to assume criminal responsibility, tried, and be convicted. As a professor, do you feel the same sentiment as what is being echoed by people who are calling for justice?
Of course, every person with a natural conscience will have no border to prevent accountability for the perpetrators of criminal formula. So what happened by then, the commission, the African Commission, brought out its finding and concluded that two international crimes were committed: crimes against humanity and war crimes. And this, they fall under international jurisdiction because they are internationally prohibited crimes. So I have an interest for the accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Ambassador, what role will the African Union, together with their partners, the RGMEC and others, be playing to ensure that citizens are free to express their views during this process?
African Union is seized of the process comprehensively, as enshrined in the 2018 agreement, including this particular chapter 5, and particularly in specific this mechanism. In that respect, it will continue to work with its partners to see to it that each and everybody who matters or stakeholder is on board, and more so that it is inclusive and observance of the 35% in this mechanism will be also followed up.
Right.
So it will continue to play its advocacy role in so far as this mechanism is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, Chris, the role of RGMEC in ensuring that there is a free speech during this process, people should be, what role will RGMEC be doing to ensure that at least people are not scared to speak, so that the process can be transparent, free and fair?
Thank you for that question. As I had earlier mentioned, RGMEC's role really is to ensure that there is implementation. And in case of any what they call deficiencies in the implementation process, we can make recommendations to the RTGNU to take corrective action. In this regard, freedom of speech is a cornerstone of this process. without people speaking their minds, then you will not be able to get the views that are relevant to then draft the legislation. And as we know, after, as per the Africa Union transitional justice policies, one of the principles is ownership and participation and inclusion. So we'll be looking to ensure that at least there's freedom of speech or freedom of expression, and that if there are any issues arising, we will definitely pick it up at the Ministry of Justice and recommend corrective action. So as our role, that will be how we will go about it.
Yeah, okay. Professor, on Monday this week, during the national address by the President of the Republic, Salva Kiir Mayardit, he did mention that he sees the establishment of the hybrid court for South Sudan as a priority. He, however, said the prioritizing punitive justice will take away the goal of reconciliation. What is your take on that?
I think that I have two views on those statements. First, the president may be worried about the conduct of that court, because the president here in domestic laws is protected by the law. He cannot be charged. He cannot be called to be investigated. But hybrid court, it takes an international jurisdiction, of which Article 98 of Geneva Convention, which protects the stakeholders, is not applicable in the case of criminal accountability of international crimes, because of Article 27 of international criminal law, which is the statute of international court. Because when you establish the hybrid court for South Sudan, it immediately takes what they call international personality regime. So the status here, the president feels that he would be called for investigation because of being a president of the country, and he's in command of responsibility. That's one thing. The second may be, he sees into it that when these investigations, they are introduced, the appointment of prosecutor, and then prosecutor later on, he may not be trusted. He may be collecting, suspecting some people with no genuine credibility, and then accusations may invoke other differences, and the violence may occur again. So the president may be also seeing that situation, there would be no trust for accountability, like what does happen in Kinshasa, in Rwanda. Some people were accused, and then instability really under carpets didn't occur. And I suspect that the president is fearing because of that situation may arise. However, as an agreement, the agreement should be implemented, and the hybrid court should go ahead. And anyone who is suspected later on, he must be indicted, investigated, and taken to judges. If you are found guilty, okay. If you are not guilty, the court will automatically freeze you.
Okay, and the secretary has this process is so keen, and you are really in charge of seeing this process, plus other stakeholders. First of all, these members, how many members are we talking about here all together who are going to go to different states?
There are 36 members of the technical committee, and then all of them are going to the state and administration areas, and they are already divided to those locations. Until yesterday, all the members of the technical committee is divided to all state, the 10 state and 3 administration areas.
So these are all South Sudanese?
All of them are South Sudanese.
And they are expected to be there for 1 month?
They are expected to be there for 2 weeks, because
2 weeks.
The period is specified by the agreement is that the public consultation is to be conducted not less than 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
That means within this month, all process of collecting information are to be put in place. This is why we consider the whole 1 month, the 15 days, for bringing the information. And also might be seen, because they are part of the teams who are going to the ground. Part of them also will go abroad. This is also the information people want to know, that the public consultation will not be in South Sudan only. The other team will be going also abroad. They will go to Sudan, to Kenya, to Uganda, to Ethiopia, to
DRC.
DRC. They will be going there also to collect the view of the people. So the period might be exceeded, but now what is planned now for local, at least what can done in South will be done in South Sudan, that the 14 days, this is where they are going to collect the information.
So how are they going to do it? Rally, meetings, in small groups?
They are going to do it, as we have said, we will do it. They will meet people on that level. They will work with non-actors, which is the traditional authority. They will be having radio show. They will be having rallies. They will be having a questionnaire. They will be having invitations with the people on the ground. All thoughts of medias, they will use it so that they collect the informations.
Okay. If you have just joined us right now, you are listening to the Roundtable with me, Sani Martin, and today we have in the studio Chris Guitari, who is the Transitional Justice Advisor with the Reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, RJMEC, Professor Quel Maluil, Jock, who is the Deputy Vice Chancellor at Dr. John Garang University of Science and Technology, and he's also Professor of Constitutional Law and International Criminal Law. I have with me also here Ambassador Jerome Biswaro, African Union Ambassador to South Sudan, based here in Juba, plus Dr. Gabriel Isaac Awo, Undersecretary and Chairperson of the Task Force in the Ministry of Justice and Constitutional Affairs, and we are discussing about the planned establishment of the Commission of Truth, Reconciliation and Healing. And you have heard from the Undersecretary on 5th of this month, that is next Tuesday. The launch will be done here by the President, and I think should be in Freedom Hall. That's the only place that can accommodate everybody. And on the 11th, the team, 36 members, will be traveling to the 10 states plus the 3 administrative areas for more consultation to gather opinions. They will be having talk shows in the states, and also they will be having meetings. And this same team will also be going abroad. It will go to Sudan, Ethiopia, Uganda, Democratic Republic of Congo, to also gather views of South Sudanese who are based there. And the process is expected to last for 2 weeks locally here, with some gap maybe they might extend. And the process is also being supported by UNDP in terms of logistics, because they have the money. You can call us later on 0912062079 or 0912062950. Those are all our lines. You can call and be part of this discussion today. Ambassador, one of the key concerns people are asking today is they really want to see the establishment of this hybrid court. It has been long overdue. What exactly is delaying the whole process?
Thank you, Sunny. I understand most of the stakeholders perhaps would have liked to have seen it yesterday,
mm-hmm,
and not today even. However, as in my initial introductory remark I made on chapter 5, these three mechanisms, our approaches, it would be holistic and not cherry-picking. And that being the case, as per Article 5.1.1.2.4 enshrines, all of these have to, the Aratugno has to initiate legislation. And after that registration, is when in the case of the hybrid court, we'll have to take that will be the legal basis which this mechanism take off. You have heard from the Undersecretary talking about the CTRH also after the field work, they would compile the document, then they would take the necessary legal measures to the to end up with the TNLI for its registration.
Yeah.
So those are legal bases, and we going to doing to the contrary is violating the very agreement. And I can assure you we are in touch with the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs. We are following legal due process in this regard.
Okay, and the Secretary, many people are saying that water assurances are there to ensure that some of these members who are going to be going to the state, and even who might happen to be members of this commission, are not perpetrators themselves.
Your question is also seem it mixed, because there is a difference between the technical committee and the commissioners will be appointed. Now the role of the technical committee only is to go to the ground for public consultation, and as I've said, the members of the technical committee is drawn from the signatory of the agreement. All group of the people who signed the agreement, the member of the technical committee is drawn from them. So we are confident that those members, they are not the territory, and they are not also people who have committed a crime. So we are sure of this.
Okay, Professor, I am sure you might have read the report or the declassified report that was released this week after the president gave an order to the National Security plus the BLF firm, law firm, to release this declassified information. It was released this week detailing the genesis of the 2013 and 2016 conflict. What is your take, and what impact do you think it has on the implementation of the peace process, and more special chapter 5 we are discussing right now?
For the Highbury Court, I will take the legal part of it. One, for the Highbury Court, it like me, if I am invited by any one of them later on, if the prosecutor is investigating and indicting some individuals, and then I become their defense lawyer, then I would use that release, because I saw some loopholes for the benefit of my client. One is that there was this accusation, that is, this is a crime which is committed called crimes against humanity. The definition of the crimes against humanity is that the systematic or widespread attack against the civilian population. By definition, the president would have benefited if he were to keep this document, not to go for public, so that if he goes later on for investigation or whatever allegations loaded on him, he would use this document in order to deny that there were no civilians, because I read something that one of them who was organizing the communication said, are there the civilians population, did they come? And then the officer answered, yes, they are here. Have you given them guns? Yes. And you see, so it would be difficult to identify who was a civilian by that time, because if you are carrying a gun, you are not any longer considered by law as a civilian, but you are a militia or whatever, that carrying a gun, that it would have been kept not to be revealed, that one. The second part of it, the people who are mentioned there, those who were organizing the fight, they have already deserted the other party, and they become members, very close members to the president. And by releasing this and revealing them, they may be not be comfortable with the president anymore, and they are his, they are in his camp now. They are not in the camp of Dr. Machar. So these are the two elements that there is a disadvantage and there is advantage. The advantage is that if the president would have kept them, he would have used it later on if we are going to the court. And if he releases it, he loses also, he creates an environment of anxiety to his supporters, like those of Ezekiel Lulgarquap, he's mentioned there, and he's a close ally at the moment with the president. And then like Taban Dengai, he's a close ally at the moment with the president. So if they are not any longer in the camp of Dr. Machar,
so your view, they should not have released this document at this time?
Exactly. The document would have been kept to maintain it. And when the time of it comes for its necessity, then it would have been used. But at this time, I think the president might have been misled by some elements who are there around him. By the way, there are no legal people around the president now. It's a composition of some people whom I call illiterates. And then they tell things which are not for the advantage of the country and the advantage for the president. And we are not protecting the president, but we are protecting the integrity of the people of South Sudan and the people of South Sudan to live in harmony. So this document, if it were to be kept aside, it would have helped a lot more than to be going for public now.
Right. Chris, some analysts have been talking of late, you know, what has been happening throughout the week, and RGMEC, IGAD, African Union, UNMISS, and all these guarantors are in town trying to diffuse the tension we have been seeing of late, though the president denied that there was no tension in Juba. And some are arguing that this process is premature, especially with the recent tension and failure by the parties to reach an agreement on key areas. What is your comment as the monitors of the agreement?
Thank you, Martin. That's a good question about the current situation that we are in. As you recall, this was triggered by SPLMIO withdrawing from the security mechanisms, their representatives from the security mechanisms, and including participation in the RJMEC, so the security mechanisms withdrew from the RJMEC also. Of course, that resulted in inabilities to monitor the permanent ceasefire on the ground and the cessation of hostilities on the ground because of the way in which CITISAM operates. And also hampered, of course, RJMEC in terms of the reports it receives from security mechanisms, be it the JDB or the JTSC and the JMCC. So as a result, of course, that was an issue for RJMEC, and the interim chairperson was able to meet the leadership of the country to discuss this matter. And of course, there were some incidences in some parts of the country that are of concern. So that combination of issues did, of course, result in an environment of anxiety. RJMEC, of course, was seized of the matter, and together with partners, whether it's UNMISS and the Africa Union also, a mission here, Ambassador Biswaro, was also part of that strong high-level delegation to engage with the leadership to ensure that the tension is diffused, that the leadership of the parties are conversing, consulting, collaborating, and talking in ensuring that the permanent ceasefire is fully restored, that participation of SPLMIO is returns to these mechanisms, but also that we are able to advance the implementation of the ARACRIS, including Chapter 2, to a level that is required. So RJMEC was part of the high-level teams that were engaging and continue to engage the leadership of the country, the parties to the agreement, to ensure that we are able to go forth in a harmonious way implementing this agreement, and particularly make headway on Chapter 2, which has been a bit of a struggle for some time.
Right. And the Secretary, we have now seen that at least the state legislative assembly has for the agreement complete, and some of them have been sworn in. Can the state legislative assembly be allowed to make their own submission on the transitional justice, given this process which is going to begin next week?
No, until this moment, the transitional assembly are not part of it.
Mm.
Now, as I told you, now people are at the level of the collecting the data and information and the view of the people of South Sudan.
Mm.
So after the teams come back from the state and administration area, as I said, the report will be compiled, will be analyzed. Then from there, the bill will be drafted by the Minister of Justice, will validate it. Then from there, will be submitted to the cabinet. Then from the cabinet to the national legislature. So now, we are not now involving the national legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are members there who became member of the assembly, because when the technical committee is appointed, there was not at that time members. But yeah. Now I said they are members, and they are working, or they are doing the job of the technical committee. That level of national assembly is still not yet.
Yes, we also understand that the civil society is expected to deliver the observation on the credibility of the transitional justice process. So what is your take on this, Undersecretary?
This is, for me, this is the nature of the human being.
Mm.
I have nothing to say, but what I want to say is that the majority of the members of the technical committee, they are from civil society. The majority, if not 50%, 60% are from civil society. So I don't know who are saying that they are talking of credibility of the process. But for my best information and the consultation we have made, I am the minister,
mm-hmm.
the at least half of the members of the technical committee are from civil society. So I don't think there is a doubt.
Okay. Professor, some politicians are advocating for what they call the restorative justice or vindication of the victims, which involves doing non-punitive justice. Can that be applied in the context of South Sudan?
I think this would have been the initiative I proposed during the time of the national dialogue. This would have been initiated from that time. In order to involve customary laws, because among the communities here, when you kill a relative of mine, then I would be in the position of looking for a person to stage a vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
But when people go to a court, then a solution is accessed or is created by giving what they call blood compensation. It did happen recently between the communities of Bor and then Mundari on the road. And then one of the guys from Dinka Bor killed a person of Mundari. And then they met, they settled the issue. An insecurity that was expected didn't occur because a blood compensation was immediately introduced. And that is the customary law, which is, we call it the customary law, is superior than international law, because international customary law is superior to international law. So it works.
And the Secretary, many people, when I was coming up with this discussion, I met one analyst, and he was asking me to ask you this question. There were some very good resolution that were reached on how to handle this, what happened during the 2013-2016 crisis in this country. And there were very strong recommendations submitted to the president, and they are now with him. And he was trying to find out, will you also be reaching out for some of these resolutions and pick those specific recommendations and implement them in your activities?
Thank you, Sani Martin. For sure, if those resolutions, as you have said, and then it's the custody of the president, if for sure can help the process, of truth and reconciliation and healing in that, in this level, and the latter level for sure will benefit from it if we can get it. If they are useful, for sure we will benefit from it. If there are ground, if the, your friend also can tell us exactly how we can get it, also will be helpful, so that we benefit from it.
Okay. And Professor, back again before we hear from the ambassador of the African Union. With this declassified information relating to the 2013-2016 conflict or the crisis, as one may wish to call it, how will this information be used in the reconciliation process? Because that's what the president said.
Two things are there. Like what I said before, anxiety has been created, and people who have become too close to the president may be very, very suspicious about their activities, and they may be, the president may be still suspecting them. Second, their involvement in the activity to visit the areas, like what was said before, may exclude some people. When you were referring that the perpetrators might be involved to go to the communities, and in their involvement here, and they were the perpetrators, then it contradicts the nature of accountability. So the process is very somehow confused. It confuses who is to be excluded and who is to be involved on the process.
Okay, if you have just joined us right now, you are listening to the Roundtable, and our lines will be open to you, 0912062079 or 0912062950, or you can visit our Facebook page and drop your comment there, and we shall be reading some of them later on here. Or you can also send us your question to our SMS number, 0912177141. My name is Sunny Martin, and in the studio I have the following panelists. We have Professor Kwel Maluel Jok, Deputy Vice Chancellor of Dr. John Garang University of Science and Technology, and he's also Professor of Constitutional Law and International Criminal Law. We have Chris Gitari, Transitional Justice Advisor with the Reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, RJMEC, here in Juba. Ambassador Jerome Biswaro, African Union Ambassador to South Sudan, based in Juba. We have also Dr. Gabriel Isaac Awo, Undersecretary and Chairperson of the Task Force in the Ministry of Justice and the Constitutional Affairs. We are discussing the planned establishment of the Commission of Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, and the launch will be done here in Juba next week. And on the 11th of this month, they will be traveling to the States for a period of 2 weeks, where they're going to gather information from people through meetings, through radio talk shows, and all this. You can call us and ask your question about this very important process. That's what many people are looking for. And they will also be going to the neighboring countries, like you heard from the Undersecretary, to also gather views. That will bring us to this very important question, Undersecretary, the issue of awareness, making sure that people get the right message. People are asking, we should have started awareness before this process kicks off almost a month ago. What happened?
Thank you very much. This is correct. This was supposed to be done since even all this period. But for a reason or another, the week we will be spent by the technical committee in Juba, they will start working on this public awareness. So we'll benefit from this week, and we have already consulted the radios in Juba and the newspapers, and part of it is what we are doing today, that we start building and created awareness to the people, so that at least when the team goes to the ground, they will be already there. For sure, the governors also, they will be part of the launching, because the people who will guarantee the security to the technical committee who are going to the ground. So for sure, the awareness have delayed a bit, but we promise that within this week, intensively, we'll let the people know what are those processes?
Mm-hmm. Maybe you can also clarify again about the safety of people who might be coming forward to give their opinions. This is very important because it removes the fear, like we said earlier on.
This is granted, as I said, by this is granted by the agreement. And this is the ground, as I said from the beginning, that we are very keen to select the people who are going to the ground to collect the information, and the information for sure will be not used for unless for the purpose of enacting the legislation. So I want our people to inform our people that they are not to worry, they are not too afraid. Let them give them the information they have, because the technical committee, we are sure, we trust them, they are from the people and they are working for the people of South Sudan. So hopefully the information which will be brought will be confidential and secret and will be used for drafting only this legislation. So let them be calm.
Okay. And shortly, our lines will be open to you, where you can call us on 0912062079 and be part of our discussion. And also, you can drop your question on our Facebook page, and also send us your question to our SMS number 0912017741. The number for SMS once again is 0912177141, and be part of our discussion. Before we go for a break, Undersecretary, I want you to summarize Kalam Debe Arabes before we go for a break, and neka rege yala badaka and nebufata kadbitana le mustemein.
Thank you very much. Shukran jaziran, Sani Martin, wa shukran jaziran le mustemein al kiram, Shaab Junub Sudan. الليلة دا نحن بنناقش في مسألة مهمة جدا عندها علاقة بالمصالحة وعندها علاقة بالتعافي وعندها علاقة بالحقيقة عشان الشعب جنوب السودان يعيش في سلام. يوم 5 في هذا الشهر هو يوم الثلاثاء القادم إن شاء الله رئيس الجمهورية هيدشن سفر بتاع اللجنة الفنية مجموعات منها هتسافر الولايات كلها العشر ولايات والوحدات الإدارية على أساس يمشوا عشان يتكلم عن الشعب جنوب السودان كيف نحن نقدر نعمل القانون البحكم مفوضية الحقيقة والمصالحة والتعافي. فده هيتم ونزل هيجوكم في مناطقكم ويسألوا منكم, هيسألوا النسوان, هيسألوا الرجال, هيسألوا البنات, هيسألوا الأولاد, انتوا دايرين القانون ده عشان يعالج مشاكل بتاع جنوب السودان شكله يكون كيف, شنو يخطوا فيه عشان يقدر نحن نحقق المصالحة والحقيقة والتعافي. فأنتوا خلوا بالكم, وبعد يوم 11 الأيام ده هتنزل الولايات وهيمشوا كل المناطق على أساس يوصلوا الرسالة بتاع الحقيقة والمصالحة والتعافي لشعب جنوب السودان. شكرا جزيلا.
Yes, you can call us shortly before, just after the break. We shall be taking, at the top of the hour, we shall be having you calling us and be part of our discussion right here on 0912062079 or 0912062950.
بسبب فيروس بتاع كورونا بيكون صعب ليتا ولأسرة بتاعك انه تبلغوا اكل كويس, عشان بيجيبوا اكل ممكن يكون صعب وسير بتاع في سوق ممكن يكون ما زي ما هو كل يوم. في حاجة او في طريقة واحد عشان انت تقدر تلقى اكل كويس, وده انه انت لازم تزرع اكل بتاعك. حتى لو انت كنت قاعد في مدينة, فحاجة اللي تديره بس إن يكون في محل صغير عشان تزرع فوقه خضار بتاعك زي بونجو, أسود, طماطم, ذرة وبصل وكروفو وبامية. لو إتمايندو مكان كفاية جرب زراعة بتابغة أو كونتينر. إتا ممكن تخط سماد وتخطو في أي كونتينر أو باغة زي باغة بتاع زيت وكمان إتا ممكن تعلقو في حيطة. زراعة بتاع أكل بتاعك بيكون سهل وما بيشيل منك قروش عشان يكون عندك أكل كويس ليك ولأسرة بتاعك. وكمان لو إتا بتزرع أكل زيادة ممكن تلقى قروش منه بأنه تبيع أكل زيادة في السوق. رسالة ده بجالتكم من منظمة بتاع أغذية وزراعة.